Mamsie Bear and Mopkin, written and illustrated by Jerry Landers, read by Jerry Landers. Turn to the title page with the little seamstress mice, and when the little bird sings like this, turn the page. Mamsie Bear and Mopkin, written and illustrated by Jerry Landers. Deep in the woods of Hopalong Hollow, there is a path that you can follow, winding neath cool canopies of leafy, gnarled chestnut trees, past River Bend and Crystal Spring, where woodland thrushes nest and sing, just up and over the blackberry fell, where Mamsie Bear and Mopkin dwell. Come with me. Mamsie Bear briskly plucked the strings of her harp as millions of silvery stars glimmered and danced in a large purple sky.
Play another song, Mamsie, while I count all the stars.
Mopkin cartwheeled and counted.
1, 2, 3. What keeps the stars in the sky? 4, 5, 6, 7. And why do they only shine at night? 8, 9, 10.
She somersaulted, landing flat on her fuzzy bottom. Mopkin stared at the velvety sky and giggled.
Stars make me smile. How many are there?
More than we could ever count in one night, dear. And very soon we will spend all of our nights and our days in hibernation, stated Mamsie the mother bear.
Hyper, what's that?
To hibernate is to take a nice long nap over the winter months. 'Tis a very bearish thing to do.
I don't like naps, especially long ones,
said the little cub, her happy mood crumbling.
If we are asleep, who will count the stars?
She fretted with a deepening gloom.
I shan't like it, Mamsie. I shan't like to hibernate.
Mopkin stood up and stomped her fat, fuzzy feet in the moss. We shall see about that, Miss Mopkin. We shall see, Mother said calmly. Mamsie Bear opened the wicker sewing basket and sifted through the contents. Silver stars. Silver thread. Silver thread, everything but silver thread. However, I do have this. She pulled her favorite cloak from the armoire. She draped the beautiful velvet cloak over her shoulders and glanced in the looking glass. She lovingly smoothed her paw over the soft purple fabric. It was the color of the night sky. This was her favorite cape. It was warm and quite becoming. Just the right shade to bring out the golden glow of her fur and eyes. Oh, well, needs must, she sighed. She spread the cloak across the floor, and with her big shears, she began to cut into the cloth. Snip and snippety, snip, 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 into the cloth she cut. In the morning, as the tea kettle whistled, Mamsie gazed out her kitchen window and observed Lady Silver Fox passing by. My, she has such stunning silver fur, she mused. Mamsie opened the cupboard door to withdraw the teacups, and there was Dimity Dormouse, her tiny fingers and toes stuck to the side of the honey pot, struggling to get loose.
Oh, help me, help me,
she squealed. For heaven's sake, Dimity, what have you done?
a drop, just a wee drop of honey, and now look at me. Oh, do help me, please.
She squeaked in desperation. Mamsie poured some hot water from the teapot into a delicate china cup and held the steaming water alongside the honey pot. The steam rose. It warmed and softened the sticky honey just enough to allow Mamsie to gently pry the tiny creature loose.
Oh, thank you ever so much,
gushed Dimity. As she proceeded to clean the honey from her itty-bitty fingers, her teeny-tiny toes, and her delicate pink tail.
Goodness, I will most certainly be late for work,
the mouse declared. Is it true that you do housekeeping for Lady Silver Fox, Miss Dimity? Inquired Mamsie.
Indeed I do. Indeed I do.
And tell me, Dimity, how does she keep her exquisite silver tail so fluffy and finely coiffed?
Why, she brushes and brushes and brushes her tail. And the hair. Oh, the hair.
Her little voice rose higher and higher.
I must sweep it up. Sweep it up, for it goes everywhere. Oh, the mess, the mess.
Squeaked Dimity most excitedly, working herself into quite a tizzy. Mamsie had to bend down closely to hear Ms. Dormouse, for although her voice was quite shrill, it was still a very small voice. Perhaps, Dimity, you could collect some for me.
Without question, anything to repay your kindness,
peeped the mouse. And then, with the honey licked clean, she disappeared into a hole in the cupboard wall, which led down to a myriad of twisty tunnels. Heaven only knows where all her tunnels led. Some said she could enter any home in the hollow without ever having to step outside. Mopkin wondered why her mother wanted someone else's fur, when she had so much of her own, and hers being such a nice shade of gold. Today we gather our garden goods and begin to stock our pantry to the very brim. When we awake from our long winter's nap, we will be very hungry indeed. Mopkin was peevish.
Let's not hypervot, Mamsie. Then we can eat our garden whenever we wish.
Hibernate, dear, Mother spoke softly. Don't you know that I dearly love you, my little cubby, and would not have you do anything if not for your own good? Now make haste. We have much work to do. And out into the glorious sunny day they strode. When the last carrot was tugged, the last potato dug, and plump red turnips sat atop the basket, the bear sat contentedly in the soil and smiled. Mopkin watched a small blue butterfly flitting in the air just beyond her reach. A pretty scarlet bird dozed on a branch above as a ruby-red rose petals drifted quietly to the ground.
When we nap, I will miss all the colors of our garden, she said.
Not to fret. Perhaps you can still have the colors of the garden, even as you sleep, Mother replied. Mamsie filled a large basket with a quantity of fresh garden goods and a hefty crock of her best honey. She set Mopkin to washing the remaining vegetables, as she had an errand to attend to. She scooted out the door, down the woodland path, and straight to the cottage of Sir Percival F. Fox. Sir Percival was fretting over whether to cook up broiled sausages or a spicy cabbage casserole for his supper, when Mamsie tapped upon his door. "Fresh garden goods, Mr. Fox?" she inquired. "Ah, madam, yes, indeed!" His eyes took in the generous basket of bounty. "A hearty soup in the making," he declared. "And honey, too," she said, extending the honey pot beneath his quivering nose. "Oh, my tantalizing!" proclaimed the fox. "I will purchase it all. And what do I owe you for this sumptuous feast, pray tell?"
Oh, dear,
the bear said suddenly. It is a shame about your jacket.
My jacket? My jacket? What is wrong with my jacket? He asked nervously.
Well, the elbows are quite worn, and the cuffs are starting to fray, answered Mamsie.
Good heavens! You don't think anyone else noticed, do you?
He stepped back inside his abode lest anyone should see him, for he was quite vain about his appearance. It happens that I have enough leftover purple velvet fabric to make you a very fine new jacket, if you wish. It would be quite striking with your golden eyes, Mamsie stated.
And what would this jacket cost me?
He asked suspiciously, for although Sir Percival was vain, he did believe in being thrifty. An even trade, I think. I should very much like to have your red jacket, even though it is a bit shabby.
Shabby? Oh, dear! Take it away! Take it far away! Exclaimed the fox, and Mamsie did.
And so, for the trifling sum of an old jacket, Sir Percival acquired enough foodstuffs for a week, and the promise of a new garment as well. It's quite a bargain, even for a sly fox such as myself. He was puzzled as to why Mamsie should want the jacket, but happy to have it gone.
That old rag, he thought with a blush, and went about his dinner plans.
At night time, after bedtime tales and honey-sweetened milk, Mamsie Bear snuggled her little cub beneath her coverlet and soothingly reassured her that the nap was a very good thing for bears to do. Why, even our own honey bees do hibernate, stated she.
Are bees hibernate?
Mumbled Mopkin drowsily as she fell off to sleep. Mamsie gathered Sir Percival's red jacket and settled into a plump chair in the parlor. Under the lantern's soft glow, she began to carefully remove the stitches from the coat until it was entirely dismantled. She then laid the pieces out as a pattern upon the leftover remnants of her purple cloak. As the mantel clock ticked away the hours, she cut, stitched, and fashioned a handsome new waistcoat for Sir Percival and tidily hung it on a peg. The candles had burned down to a waxen puddle. She lit a few more and examined the soft, worn, velveteen fabric in varied shades of red, which not long ago had been a fox's jacket. She whispered in delighted satisfaction. Sir Percival has very good taste. It is perfect for my needs. Mamsie began to cut the red fabric into various shapes, forms, and patterns. As moontide gave way to morning's light, and the sun's rays came peeking through the pines and spreading across the parlor floor, the mother bear piled her little red snippets neatly one upon the other and placed them in a basket. She sleepily shuffled off to bed for a bit of sleep. Days turned into weeks, and summer's sultry heat gave way to autumn's balmy breeze. Mopkin tenderly tucked sleepy tulip bulbs deep in the earth, covering them with a blanket of soil. Her mother said that the little bulbs would be napping, just like us. When we awake in the springtime, so will the tulips. Their colorful, smiling faces will greet us with joy. That very morning, Dimity Dormouse suddenly appeared from a hole in the floor, delivering 17 balls of silver fox fur. My goodness, this is much more than I ever expected, claims Mamsie. Lady Silver Fox certainly does have a great quantity of hair.
Well, proclaimed Dimity, you did save me from what could have been a dreadful fate, simply dreadful. I shudder to think of being stuck to a honey pot for the rest of my life. 'Tis a ghastly thought.
A quivering Dimity began to work herself into quite a frenzy once again. There, there, little mouse, do calm yourself with a cup of tea. She poured a thimbleful of calming chamomile for the small creature and dispersed muffin crumbs across the floorboards for the hard-working ants. She examined the beautiful silver fur and pronounced it simply perfect, the color of the stars. The mother bear packed the silver balls in a basket along with the very small crocks of jams and jellies. She and Mopkin donned their bonnets and followed the footpath that led through the forest pines and into the mossy green of Hopalong Hollow. They had to tread most carefully, for the creatures living here are ever so much smaller than bear. Mamsie presented the balls of fur to Mother Hopalong, the weaver and spinner of the hamlet. "Will you spin some strong, thick silver thread in return for this?" She offered Mother Hopalong a generous supply of sunflower honey, lemongrass jam, and crab-apple jelly in bunny-sized crocks.
"Delighted," replied Mother Hopalong. "This will keep my young buns in biscuits and tarts for many a moon."
Mother Hopalong's wheel began to hum and whirl, spinning a gossamer silvery twist. On the return trip, Mopkin informed her mother that rabbits do not hibernate as bears do, and aren't they the lucky ones?
"I hope my chums do not forget me," sighed the little bear.
Mamsie squeezed Mopkin's paw in her own. "Oh, no, silly bear. They will not forget you, nor you them," she promised. They sat on the bridge overlooking Croaky Toad Creek and watched as small green and yellow frogs perched upon stones and lily pads, croaking and peeping a goodbye to summer serenade. And then, one by one, they leaped and hopped into the water, swam to the very bottom of the pond, and buried themselves in the mud. Mopkin waved goodbye to the wee green hoppers and glanced longingly up at her mother. "Yes, dear. I know you will miss the little frog folk. I wonder what I can do about that." That evening, from within her sewing trunk emerged the scraps of green fabric, lime and emerald, pines and froggy greens, along with the strongest of green threads. One morning, as Dimity Dormouse and Mopkin swept and scrubbed and dusted the bear home, Mamsie set out in her canoe and paddled down the winding river. Every few miles, she paused along the shore and dug her paw deeply in the sand, scooping up shiny pebbles, colorful shells, and small, interesting pieces of driftwood. She wrapped them carefully in her kerchief. She then glided further down the stream. She pulled her canoe ashore at Cattail Cove and listened intently. Soon she heard the sound of jingling and jangling as Fiona Goose Feathers waddled along the blue lobelia path with her baubles and bangles swinging from her long, elegant neck. Fiona dressed in fine frocks and had a weakness for flashy jewelry. She honked loudly as Mamsie stepped forward and spread the kerchief at Fiona's orange-webbed feet.
"What dazzling doodads you have there, Miss Mamsie!" she exclaimed. "Oh, my! Oh, my! Such charming necklaces these would make! And bibelots, bracelets, and anklets!"
Fiona was absolutely giddy with excitement. "These are all for you, Miss Goose Feathers. I do, however, need a quantity of your finest down feathers. Just the ones you are no longer using, of course," Mamsie stated.
"Well, I can spare a few feathers for such treasures as these," Fiona proclaimed as she happily gathered up the goodies.
The goose led her to a wattle hut and opened the door ivory white feathers fluttered out the entrance and softly floated through the air.
These are last year's feathers. I'm no longer in need of them. Take as many as you wish.
Mamsie filled her bags till they bulged. Much obliged, Miss Fiona, she called, as she paddled back up the river towards her home. Brisk autumn breezes shook the trees and sent rusty red and gold and yellow leaves drifting down, down, down to rest in layers upon the earth. The bears walked along the crunchy, cushioned woodland path to market day in the hollow. Mamsie was in search of the perfect needle. A needle long and strong enough to pierce through, say, several inches of down feathers? She inquired of the vendors. No one had such a needle, but she purchased several boxes of porcupines, two mugs of cold apple cider, and a basket of hot cross buns. On the trip home, Mamsie spied the perfect needle at the very tip top of a locust tree. 'Twas the sharpest locust thorn she had ever seen. Mamsie was a capable tree climber, but the fragile trunk of this tree would never support a huge person such as she, and even a good tree shaking would not loosen a stubborn locust thorn. However shall I get that needle? The Whiskerwiggins and Bushybottoms were frantically darting and scuttling from limb to limb in an effort to gather as many of the green acorns as they could find for their winter stores.
Never enough! Never enough!
They scolded one another. Perhaps I could assist you, Mamsie's voice echoed up into the treetops. Hold on tightly, little tree folk! With her huge paws, she shook and shook and shook each nut tree, as all manner of nuts showered to the earth with a plunkety-plunk-plunk. Soon the woodland floor was covered with nuts galore, and fuzzy wood folk scampered down the trees to cheerfully collect the yummy morsels. Two grateful Whiskerwiggins scampered up to the top of the locust tree, at Mamsie's request, to dislodge the perfect needle. This will do nicely, Mamsie whispered as she examined the sharp, shiny needle. Mopkin wondered why her mother would need to sew with such an enormous needle. Each and every night thereafter, as Mopkin silently slept, Mamsie lit her brightest lamps and threaded that perfect needle. Sometimes with silver twist, sometimes with rosy red or robin's egg blue, sunflower yellow or froggy green. Her porcupines securely held the shapely bits and pieces of fabric together. Pieces cut from her treasured purple cloak, Sir Percival's old red jacket, and every colorful cloth snippet she had fetched from deep within her sewing trunk. Piles of soft, downy goose feathers were stuffed between the layers of fabric. Her sharp, shiny needle pierced the cloth, in and out, and the threads appeared as tiny stitches beneath her golden paws. And then finally, one last stitch and a final knot, Mamsie was finished. She surveyed her work with satisfaction, folded it lovingly, and placed it in the trunk. Outside, the air was chill, but in the bear home, all was tidy and cozy in readiness for the long nap. Mopkin eyed the rows and rows of crocks and jars filled with jams, jellies, and honey. Sacks of apples, nuts, and potatoes were stacked against the wall, and every nook and cranny was spick and span. Mopkin even had her very own bed, carved especially for her by the beaver folk of Millikanville. But, despite all these wonders, Some things were missing. The colors of the summer garden, and the crisp blue sky, the tall trees, the funny frogs, and her wee bunny chums were nowhere to be seen. And where, oh, where were the silver stars? Mopkin sleepily sighed and sadly whispered,
"Mamsie promised, but I guess some things are just impossible."
Mamsie quietly stepped up from behind, scooped up and pillowed in her arms the little cub. "Anything is possible, dear." She carried Mopkin to her new bed and softly set her upon the plump mattress. Mother bears always keep their promises. Now, close your eyes, and soon you'll see. Mamsie reached into her trunk, retrieving the folded bundle. She shook it out. The fabric spread, fluttered down, and settled softly upon the round form of the little bear. Mopkin opened her eyes to see that, spread upon the bed before her and atop her, from her neck to her toes, she was covered in the soft, thick blanket of love wrought from her mother's heart and paws.
"Oh, Mamsie!"
she squealed with delight. There were soft red roses, birds, and berries of the garden. The hopalongs were frolicking amid the yellows, blues, and violets of the meadow as woodland vines twisted along the border. Pine trees traveled up to a purple velvet sky that was filled, yes, filled, with tiny silver stars. Small green frogs splashed in the blue waters of the stream that ran right beneath her chin. And all of this here, in her own little bed. Her Mamsie had made all this happen. She saw hundreds and hundreds of mother's teeny stitches in the butterflies and bees, the tulips and trees, the mice, the birds, and the wood folk. It was a wonderful thing to behold. It was just like a perfect day in the hollow. She traced the delicate threads on the purple cloth with her claw.
"These stars are made from the silver thread you had spun. And this was your best cloak," she declared. "Oh, Mamsie, you made all this for me? Why?"
"It's because I wanted you to be warm and happy and snug. It's because I love you today and tomorrow and forever and ever, precious bear," said Mother.
"And I love you, Mamsie, and my quilt too,"
the little bear whispered, with tiny tears welling in her eyes. She hugged the quilt tightly to her body. Mamsie sang a lullaby about silver stars and sweet dreams as Mopkin hummed along and counted the stars on her thick, beautiful quilt. And then with a wide yawn, she said,
"I think, Mamsie, it's time to hibernate."
Her eyelids grew heavy as her thick lashes closed over her amber eyes. And when winter cloaked the woods of the hollow in snow and ice, the two bears slept in their warm, safe beds and dreamed of bunnies, bears, springtime, and the smell of a fresh new day. And all around the hollow, mamas and papas tucked their little ones in bunky beds, kissed them on their little heads, and blew the candles out. Everyone sleeps. Everyone dreams. Chippies, mice, and bunnies do. Great big bears and froggies, too. All the creatures in the trees. Can you guess whose dreams are these? Mamsie's Lullaby. The silver stars are shining bright, high above the world tonight. And you are snuggled safe and tight in your little bed. So close your eyes, my little bear. Go to sleep, you've not a care. Your dreams will take you anywhere in your little bed. Lullaby, lullaby, la 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 lullaby. Go to sleep.